What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that have come out this week, and we do reviews for them.
I was doing views. I was just that first view.
Yeah, Pete was doing previews.
Yeah.
That's another type of thing.
That's where you look at the cover and are like, I think I get it.
Yeah. Like they always say, judge a book by the cover. And I think you can judge our first book by the cover, Wonder Girl number 1 from DC Comics by Joelle Jones, because it's a gorgeous cover. And this is also a gorgeous comic book. Judged.
All right, let's move on to the next one. And
Shang-Chi number 1. Gorgeous cover, gorgeous book. Ranger of the Divine, number 1, judged! Okay, let's go back to Wonder Girl. This is actually a prequel to the Future State story. It's taking place in the current continuity. So we're getting to see Wonder Girl before she was Wonder Woman, like she was in there, which honestly took me a little bit of mental adjustment to get used to.
Still
very good story, very good characters, and I like this quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I really love the art. The stuff before was hitting a little bit, but I don't mind building to that, like get everybody on board. But yeah, I really love this character's design. It's a lot of fun. The art really kind of like sets up a great world that kind of, I feel like is a great world for this character. I'm having a lot of fun with it. So more please.
I agree. I really like this. It is a little weird, and I don't know how they're going to sort of complete this balancing act of the continuity. Because in the Wonder Woman title, it feels like she's sort of journeying back toward being Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And then we have this title where we have Wonder Girl. What's her sort of move? How long is she going to be in this space before she moves into the next space? So all that continuity thinking aside, beautiful art, fun story. I think she's such a fun character and brings a great energy to the Wonder Woman mythology.
I agree. Next up, Shang-Chi, number 1 from Marvel, written by Jean Lun Yang, art by Dyke Ruan. This is spinning off of, I guess there was a one-shot with Shang-Chi where he took over his father's old terrorist / crime organization, and in here he is going to be going up against the Marvel Universe, starting with Spider-Man in this issue. Super fun. I mean, Jean Lun Yang, always just a great writer, and I had a blast reading this.
Just the relationship here between Shang-Chi and his sister is great. Like, they're fun. Spider-Man in here as sort of the butt of a lot of the jokes is great. And I like the premise that he's going to be fighting. He and his sister are going to fight everyone, all the big heroes in the Marvel Universe, is great.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of, reminds me a little bit of, Punisher versus the Marvel Universe type of thing. But I really like the setup. I really like the kind of the start of their Spider-Man and Shang-Chi's relationship. So, like, I think it's a great first issue. A lot of action, amazing art. Love the relationship stuff with the brother-sister. So, yeah, completely on board. Can't wait for the freaking movie!
I love there's this idea that there's the Yeren root that you put on your hands or different parts of your body and you get animal hands, which is cool.
That's real.
That's real, obviously. Yeah. I've been digging it up for Yeren. It's very expensive at Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
But I also love the reference to Spider Island, where if you remember, Shang-Chi came in and taught Spidey how to... he lost his spider sense, and he had to sort of learn how to be a hero without having that sense that really guides most of his actions.
Yeah, and it was cool because there was that line of, like, what's your spider sense say? And I was like, nice.
That's a burn.
That's a great burn. Yeah, it's a sick burn.
Next up, Rangers of the Divide, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics by Megan Huang. This is a new mythology. I briefly thought it was another one of Dark Horse's video game adaptations just based on the title and the cover. So don't judge a book by a cover in this case.
Okay.
But this is,
now
as you can kind of surmised by the cover, about a bunch of dragon riders that get embroiled in a monster fight. They're all in training. I really like the art in here in particular. I thought it was very reminiscent of Avatar and things like that, which I thought was really good. The story took a little while to get going, but once it did, I'm into the idea of this team of dragon riders. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I really like the brightness of the art. It really stands out. It's the dragons are fantastic. You know, a lot of human talking, but a lot of great dragon fights and stuff like that. So that was enjoyable.
I'm going to start using that in reviews from now on. Too much human talking.
I was listening to this podcast. It was so much. It was almost all human talking.
Boo. Good thing you got dogs barking in the background. That really helps us out.
That's right. Try to bring in the entire animal kingdom when I'm doing my recording.
Like a modern day Dr. Doolittle.
That's true. Boy. Please, dog, bark more. Bugs, come to me. I feel like this book is sort of halfway between How to Train Your Dragon and Game of Thrones is what the vibe I was catching.
Okay.
If you're a fan of either of those worlds. And then the art was reminiscent to me of the Luna Brothers. And girls back in the day. So those are references that you can take right to the bank.
Wow. There you go. Let's move on. Talk about Home Number 2 from Image Comics, written by Julio Atta, art by Anna Wysik. Now, this is a book that blew us away in the first issue. It was about a young kid who is taken to the border, put into holding by the U.S. government, separated from his mom. Very heartbreaking. And then the twist at the end is that he has superpowers and he breaks out. That's where we pick up in this issue. We find out a little bit more of the mythology of this world, as well as still dealing very much with the reality of being an illegal immigrant in America. And also, just a little note, Julio Anta is actually going to be on our live show in a couple of weeks, so I'm very excited to chat about this.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
But what did you guys think? Did it hold up from issue one to issue two?
Yeah, I like this a lot. I feel like the book is written to really... The characters, even the smaller characters, the woman who's running the restaurant that the kid walks into is like just a really – everyone's really believable. It's really, really good. The art is different and feels like it matches the story really well. And it reminded me of like the way that the X-Men metaphor has been sort of shifted over the years about being an outsider. Mm-hmm. This feels like a very modern iteration of that and using superpowers to – empower people who are on the outside of the mainstream, and really, really telling that story through that lens is great. I thought this is a great read.
Yeah, I agree. Also, Aunt Gladys is a boss, showing up to really help things out. Really was worried about that kid in the fucking mall just running around. I was like, oh man, this is just giving me a heart attack. I think that this is a very moving, beautiful comic. And I think it's I'm very excited for it. I hope can't wait to read more.
Whether it's a grandmother, an aunt, or any older female relative, Pete is there for it.
Oh, yes.
Don't try to fucking pigeonhole me, bro.
This is not a pigeonhole. You're a total Golden Girl fan.
Fucking come on. You're goddamn right.
Yeah, no. This is no judgment. This is no judgment zone, Pete.
Yeah, I would never try to pigeonhole you with older ladies. That's what you try to do.
Oh boy!
Nightwing number 80 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo. This book has been so good, and I can't believe how good it's been. But I want to throw something out to you guys that really struck me with this issue. So Nightwing has suddenly become rich because he has been given a lot of money by Alfred, who passed away. And he is trying to make things right in Bloodhaven, but at the same time, of course, there are terrible things happening. There's a guy going around stealing people's hearts. He is teaming up with Barbara Gordon in this issue, who just cannot get out of Bloodhaven to save her life. This, to me, is Tom Taylor's take on Hawkeye, Matt Fraction and David Aja's Hawkeye, but competent.
Whoa.
That's a great
shots
take.
Fired?
And I'll tell you what.
No, in a good way, I think.
Okay.
I had that same thought in the sequence where he's putting the staff together to hand to Tim Drake.
And not just hand. He throws it to the middle of a fight. It's not like it's,
Yeah, he uses his hand. When I throw something, I'm saying I'm handing it.
Oh, wow.
Like a lot of great baseball pitchers are handing the ball to the batter. Or ideally the catcher.
Here you go.
Here you go. Good luck. Good luck grabbing it as I hand it to you.
Yeah. I wish you wouldn't undercut the action of that moment because I thought it was a really fantastic moment. But go ahead with your view.
Mine is a view. And I love this book. This was my pick. I picked this.
Was it?
I think this is we're back to some primetime Dick Grayson. We've had some wanderings in the last couple of years. We had a Rick Grayson. We had just some a little bit of confusion. And this is great stuff. We get Tim Drake in here. The Barbara Gordon relationship is exciting and happening again. It's all feeling really good.
Just real quick, you coming to us live from a roller rink? What's going on over by you there?
No, someone's vacuuming upstairs.
Okay,
there's cool. Also there. It just it helps seems like they're mentally vacuuming.
Know what's going on because it seems a little like
it seems like they're vacuuming with a baby, like or maybe a baby's vacuuming. So I don't know exactly what's happening, but it's hard to tell. I live in New York City. It's a flavor of the city.
It's good. It's cool, man. I just wanted to.
And just to mention, I am coming live from a roller rink.
All right, cool.
But it's closed down because of COVID.
Well, hopefully we'll open up soon. Okay, so
thanks
first up,
to Blasio.
They say that the COVID really sticks to the skates and just flies out from the
sparks. CDC said that, right? See new CDC guidelines?
Yeah, it will let you do anything but roller skate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever you do, don't eat the skate sparks.
Yeah. CDC says keep this much distance between you when you're skating and no holding hands.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Couple skate only. Let's fucking move on. So this is a fantastic comic. I agree. It's really, really enjoyable. And the kind of bad guy character reveal is fantastic and very scary. I'm very interested to see how this all works out. I like all the little relationship moments we had in this issue. This is just a lot of fun. The art is absolutely fantastic.
I gotta hand it to you, Pete. Great review.
Fantastic Four Life Story number one from Marvel, written by Mark Russell, art by Sean Isaacs. This is a rare serious turn from Mark Russell, which I was very surprised by. It's also following up on Chip Zdarsky, I believe, did Spider-Man Life Story.
Yeah.
Which sets the characters in their original time period, and then each issue follows them to a different decade as they get older in real time. So this is, of course, kicking off with the Fantastic Four origin, but it's a very different riff on it. Still a very good story, but I kept waiting for the satirical turn because that's what we always get from Mark Russell, and it never came.
Well, but let me say, like, I hear you. I definitely expected there to be more of a, like, arch take. But I do think what Mark Russell's talents were used for on this issue were just great, snappy dialogue that really moved and mm-hmm. really conveyed a lot in a very short period of time. I liked the new take on the origin. I like the way Galactus is used. I like that we don't have to have a classic Doom situation here. We have a different character who is the villain and a villain, and the Ben Grimm stuff was great in this.
All right, here we go. So I had just a hard
woke
time.
Pete just woke up from a micro nap, and he's
yeah. I had a hard time with this comic. Reed Richards
this
is a real
got no aunts, no grandmas, no older female relatives of any kind, and it was bad.
What voice are you doing there? Anyways, I really had a hard time with Reed Richards being a complete asshole. And
Ben Grimm
is a complete asshole all the time.
I don't like it. It's one of the things that I don't like about Reed Richards.
But he's not more of an asshole in this issue. If anything, Ben Grimm is being way
more
of an asshole.
Hey, you watch your mouth. Don't you fucking put this on Ben Grimm. That guy got turned into a rock. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what that's like. Mm-hmm. You don't know what that's going to do to you.
Everybody else gets to walk
around fine, but he's got to walk around as The Rock. So, like, you know.
I mean, if I had to walk around as The Rock, I'd feel great. He's doing amazing. He's got a sitcom on NBC, has presidential ambitions. He's doing awesome. What are you even talking about? Pete.
It's not The Rock I was talking about, you fucking piece of shit.
I was so mad. I mean, Ben Grimm does betray the Fantastic Four, and it gets them into sort of a problematic place.
Ben Grimm is a saint. Don't fucking talk shit about fucking Ben Grimm.
Well, if you want to talk about Saints, there's some problems there, too.
Oh, man.
Wow. Oh, wow. Way to take it there. I think we really got to the heart of Pete's preview.
This is very well done. Sean Isaac's art is very
the
good.
The art is phenomenal.
I'm really looking forward to the second issue. I feel like that's where these series potentially really start to sing, is when they start to move farther afield from the main continuity. We always get that in this first issue, but it's going to stretch even farther in issue two. So I'm very excited to check that out.
Before you move on, question. Why does Galactus have teeth? He doesn't actually chew planets, right?
He used to be a humanoid. Before.
Yeah, he used to have teeth, and then he kind of, like, when you're eating the planets, it kind of ruins your
teeth. So, wait, he's just keeping up his teeth?
It's the chocolate center that gets to your teeth eventually.
No, he was a humanoid.
Of course, Galen, and then wasn't his name Galen?
Galen, yeah. He gets in a spaceship, he travels through the Big Bang, ends up in the new universe, and then he puts on a funny hat and he eats planets.
But don't you think, let's say you never used your teeth.
That's how Stanley pitched it. I 100% guarantee you.
Yeah, exactly. He had it all figured out.
He puts on a funny hat and he eats planets. Go, Kirby.
But don't you think, like, put yourself in Galactus's position. You use your teeth for a long time. Yep.
Yeah.
Use your teeth for a long time. You get to be a giant god being. Celestial level character. Use your teeth to eat anymore. Mm-hmm. You still flossing? You're brushing? Because his teeth are beautiful.
Is your first move when you become some sort of godlike being like, well, get rid of these bone things in my mouth?
I'm just saying he has perfect teeth. It feels like he let him go.
Maybe because it's involved in talking as well. Like, otherwise, you'd kind of talk like this. I'm Galactus.
I feel like he doesn't. It's not like people are like, oh, speak up, no enunciate. I think he just sort of broadcasts noise.
Yeah. Maybe it's a vanity thing where he's like, I don't want people to know that I'm a very old man, so I'm going to keep
You think he's
teeth.
Asking the Silver Surfer to like, hey, could you power cosmic up my teeth, bro? Get in there and clean them up. I got a little bit of planets.
The Silver Flosser.
Nice.
Maybe that's why Fire Lord's staff was like that. It was meant to just like a big toothpick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Terex's axe was just in there cleaning up the guns.
That's why they all have weapons. The surfboard is also forgetting.
It's a tongue depressor. It's a tongue depressor. The silver tongue depressor.
This is all making sense. Radiant Black, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins, art by Marcelo Costa. We've talked about this book quite a bit, or at least for 3 months, that it's a superhero tale in the style of Invincible. Maybe the main character's a little bit older. He's this failed writer who gets these weird superpowers. There is a huge twist at the end of this issue.
Yeah.
That is, I can't imagine they're not going to reverse it in some way, but I love this book already, and I love that they're just taking huge swings 4 issues in. It's great.
And you're talking about the fact that everybody in this comic loves the movie Out of Sight. That's what...
That is the huge twist that I'm talking about. Yeah. Because as we all know, everybody hates that movie. What are you talking about, Pete? No, it's great.
It's a great movie. That's what I'm fucking saying.
Well, that's not a twist.
Pete, are you confusing... wow, really silenced. Oh, he took another micronap. Pete, when you get a twist when you order from like an ice cream truck, it means there's a surprise with every lick. That's what the twist is.
Yeah. I always go up to the
ice cream truck and say, hey, can I get the thing where it gives me a surprise with every lick? And he's like, give me a twist, sir. Here you go. Yeah,
I only get ice cream from the M. Night Shyamalan ice cream truck.
Nice. Smart.
Oh, I was going to give you one of those straight ice creams. One of those piles.
I ordered a twist and you gave me just a handful of garbage.
That's a twist. I didn't know everybody loved Out of Sight. I thought I would appreciate all the love that movie got in this comic.
Oh, no, everybody loves that movie.
Oh, okay.
Back on Radiant Black a little bit, if I may.
Let's keep talking about this nonsense.
Don Cheadle in Out of Sight is fucking fantastic.
What are you? Where are you now even? I mean, the surprise at the end was great. And it really, I'm surprised by this book, the way they're really moving quickly. The last issue was wildly different than this issue. And we get this twist. I think we're going to end up with a Sam Beckett Al situation.
Ooh.
That's my predict.
Love it.
I'm, of course, speaking of Quantum Leap.
Yes. Everybody knows what you're talking about. That is great. I love that idea. I love this book. Definitely pick it up. This feels like a big thing to get on board with. Were you going to say something non-out-of-sight related?
I wasn't. I was going to try to steer it back more towards J-Lo and Out of Sight because it's a... I mean, you want to talk about, you know, some fun rom-com moments there back and forth is just really great.
I don't think we wanted to talk about that. Catwoman number 31 from DC Comics, written by Rab V, art by Fernando Blanco. Another great book from DC Comics that has been awesome the past couple of issues as Catwoman is taking on some new evils in Gotham City while she's on a break from Batman. This gorgeous book, just like gorgeous. Nightwing, I think the way that Fernando Blanco is laying things out is creative and exciting and propulsive. And Rab V's storytelling is really good as well. And he's writing a really good Catwoman. This is a very fun issue.
I think it's a they. I really think that not only is the Catwoman kind of stuff and also the Cat and Bat references kind of heartbreaking a little bit, but I love this Ivy as well. It's really like, I'm very intrigued by everything going on. I really am excited about like a kind of new Ivy moving forward. Also, the steampunk father thing at the end was a little crazy, but this comic is absolutely beautiful and fantastic. So,
yeah, I mean, I agree. The Ocean's 11-esque description that Catwoman does of her her crime, her what she did to get Poison Ivy out of there was great, very Soderbergh. The introduction of the newer characters at the end, I thought were great as well. Like Ram V killing it.
Absolutely. The next issue that I want to talk about is honestly really personal to me, actually.
Whoa.
Really? Well, like what are you talking about?
Wait, let me guess.
It's Batman? It's the
Batman.
Issue of shaving. And manscaping, to be more specific.
Oh, Alex, God. Please get more specific if you possibly can.
I definitely will. Happening? The engineering team over at Manscaped, they're like the Avengers of pubic hair, which, honestly, the Avengers are already the Avengers of pubic hair, I think, in my opinion.
You've said that since the first movie came out, that you've said that.
Yeah. I definitely did. I came out of seeing the Avengers and I was like, that was a groin right there. They have successfully created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer and it's now available for purchase in the USA and Canada.
Yeah, like, Manscaped. Me and 2 million of my closest male friends worldwide trust Manscaped. And we've got this exclusive offer for you, 20% off free worldwide shipping and use the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com.
I got mine in the mail, and this thing is very cool. I've long thought it's high time for me to start manscaping, and now I'm ready to become.
I also have thought that, not to interrupt.
About me or about you?
About personally? You.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
We've been talking about it a lot.
I know, especially during pandemic when we have both our Zoom for our faces and our crotch Zooms. We operate separately. I'm ready to become the butler of my own personal Wayne Manor.
Wow.
This thing has a surround. I'm talking about Alfred, and Alfred needs to.
Your butler died, right?
Tragically. He left a lot of money to the manscaper. This thing has a. The butler did it, and by did it, I meant really cleaned up down there. This thing has a ceramic blade, skin-safe technology.
And a 4,000K LED spotlight, different guard lengths to customize my trim. It's waterproof so I can stand erotically in a Central Park fountain and use it, which is something that now that the CDC has approved, mask off, I can do once again.
Not my favorite image.
I went to Central Park the other day and I used the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer and everybody said, wow, that is a really beautiful and safe shave.
Well, look at that cherub. Is that a statue? Oh, no, it's Alex Zalbin doing his classic Sunday routine.
Yeah. Classic ball shaving in the park. We got this product shipped to us. I used it. I do think it is great. Check it out if you're looking for that nice, clean package that Justin always says is important.
I always do. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use fansided20. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
This program is brought to you by the Hulu original series MODOK. I can't stop talking about this show. It's the craziest, funniest, and wildest thing I've seen in a long time. MODOK is a supervillain voiced by the incredible Patton Oswalt. Oh yeah, did I mention MODOK stands for Mental Organism Designed Only for Killing? For MODOK, the only thing harder than ruling the planet is running a family. Get ready to discover that not all villains are super. This show has an amazing cast, with Patton as MODOK, along with Amy Garcia, Ben Schwartz, Melissa Fumero, Wendy McClendon Covey, Beck Bennett, John Daly, Sam Richardson, and celebrity cameos as some of your favorite Marvel heroes. Marvel's MODOK, series premiere May 21st, only on Hulu.
And now it's time to talk about The Immortal Hulk, Time of Monsters, number one from Marvel, written by Alex Pagnadell and Al Ewing and David Vaughn, art by Juan Ferreira and Kevin Nolan. This is another one-shot showing another part of this massive mythology that Al Ewing has been creating for the Hulk. Here we go back to, I don't know, like 10,000 BC or something like that, to look at the dawn of man as they get
Alex,
their own.
Alex, yes. It's 9,500 BC.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
How dare you just erase the 500.
I'll be turning in my comic review card now. This book is great. I love this story. He has been building this wild, insane thing that did not start with Bruce Banner, but clearly goes way, way, way back. We've talked about this before on the podcast. I am so curious if the one below, the guy behind the green door who's pulling all the strings here, is somebody we know from history, and I don't know who it is, but I just kept thinking about that reading this issue, where it just feels like it has to be somebody, right? Like somebody connected to the Hulk or mythology or something.
No, it's different. It's going to be the Jolly Green Giant. That's what it's going to be.
The original Hulk.
Yeah.
The original rage-driven Hulk. Jolly? That's bullshit. That's the real history. Is that guy the angry green giant?
But speaking of history, this comic, when it started, I kind of forgot what I was reading for a little bit. But the art is absolutely fantastic. I very much enjoyed the kind of monster aspect of what we got here in this. It gets really creepy, but fantastic. And then the kind of movie kind of backup part, I guess, of it later was really very interesting. I was a little worried. I was like, hey, Marvel, you're using a Scarecrow character very similar to DC's. Is that legal? But I very much enjoyed what was happening.
It's not. Yeah. Marvel was arrested.
Oh, I thought so. Because it's basically Scarecrow, and they say Scarecrow, and he's talking about other people's nightmares. I'm like, how much closer can you get here?
Corporations are people, and they threw this whole corporation right into one prison cell, into the drunk tank. I like this book a lot as well. I agree the mythology that's being fleshed out here is great. It's huge. I mean, we've seen Hulk at the end of all of time, and then we're getting different aspects throughout history going backwards. To your point, Alex, I mean, how can it be anyone but Bruce at the center of this?
Interesting.
Like, I feel like if the genesis of the Hulk, when that gamma bomb went off, if that is the fixed point, then I feel like we're seeing like Big Bang style, the green door opening forwards and backwards in time. And if it's someone else, doesn't that sort of ruin the Hulk if there's someone else to blame?
If they do the Big Bang theory, it would be fun if it was Bazinga the whole time.
Bazinga you're saying, is the name of the main character.
That's Jim Parsons' character is named Bazinga, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I've never seen
one of my favorite shows is Young Bazinga. Take it back.
I like that Bruce theory. I think that's a really good one. I've certainly been racking my brains because he's pretty much covered everybody else in Hulk mythology at this point, so I don't know who else it could be, but
I think that's solid. I feel like it has to tie back to the Hulk in some way, and we're very much ending the end game. I think there's 3 or 4 issues left of this title in total, so it's going to be exciting to see what happens.
I did want to say I very much enjoyed the last page with Hulk and Scarecrow. I thought that was a really fantastic last page.
It's a really good one shot. Next up, Ultra Mega number 3 from Image Comics by James Harren. This book takes place in a world that has been taken over by kaiju. It's a kaiju post-apocalypse. We're following one character who may be able to stop them. Very similar to Radiant Black. There's a big twist at the end here that I think I figured out how they're going to reverse, but again, we have a book that I think is taking some really big swings, and we certainly talked about some of the controversy around the first issue, and we decided to follow it anyway because we thought the art was good, we thought the story was interesting, we're curious to see where it goes. I personally, and maybe there's something I'm missing, but I think by issue 3, we are very far from where the story started, and you have a sense of why they did the things they did in the first issue, and I think those have been justified, at least in some way. If I'm wrong, would love to hear from the viewing audience, would love to hear from you guys, but that's my take on it.
I agree with you. The issues in the first issue, it feels like that was like almost starting in the cliche that I feel like people were criticizing. And then the second issue, we talked about this last time, and this issue for sure, are just like blasting past that into this totally different world that is, I think, is beyond all of that that other stuff. And we're seeing I really like the story, and I really like the art is great. I love the twist at the end. This feels like a story where no one's safe in a good way. Mm-hmm. So I'm on board.
The story is really starting to kind of get different and enjoyable, and especially in this issue, except for maybe the grossest fart I've ever seen in a comic in this thing. That part kind of pulled me out a little bit.
Rick Remender would have some words for you about the grossest fart in a comic book.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure he could come up with something that might be even grosser. But
this is something I should chase if there's like an award going out.
I'm enjoying where this comic is going now, and the art's fantastic.
Next up, Batman Fortnite 0. Number 3 from DC Comics, written concept by Donald Mustard, written by Christos Gage, art by Riley Brown. We have, Justin, I don't know if you've been on the stack where we talked about issue 1 or 2 necessarily.
I was there for issue 1. Okay. I missed issue 2, I think.
All right. Okay. It is wild to me how hard this comic book has been going. Just the first 2 issues, I think we loved because they were really digging so crazy deep about the Batman-Catwoman relationship. Yep. This one blew my mind is probably too strong, but reading this book, I was like, holy shit, what are they doing here? It's just absolutely wild how hard they're going for it. And I hesitate to spoil it, but I think they spoil it on the cover. The twist that they bring in is that Batman is in Fortnite world. He loses his memory every 22 minutes. He's trying to figure it out anyway because he's Batman. So they try to throw a wrench in the gears to stop him and slow him down. And the wrench is Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe, which is wild.
Yeah! Weird. I lost
my fucking mind with this. It was like watching my childhood come back to life and fight each other. Also, one of the saddest episodes in G.I. Joe is where Snake Eyes sacrifices himself in this fucking mind. And they kind of recreated that in this issue. And, oh, man, I was having flashbacks. But this is fucking bananas. So good. So hard. Like, I love the fact that, like, whoever's doing the kind of voiceover is so impressed with Batman. This is such a weird but amazing comic.
This issue, sorry to interrupt, Justin, the one thing that I'll say and then turn it over to you is versus the first 2 issues that felt like, okay, you're going for the Batman-Catwoman romance. This is DC meets Fortnite. I get this.
Yep.
This, in the absolute best way, felt like playing with action figures.
Yes!
You're like, well, I got this Batman action figure. I got these random action figures I found on a box on the street that are just kind of there. Oh, I got the Snake Eyes action figure. I'm going to make them fight. That's fun. Let's do that. And that's how it read to me.
And I also liked how, like, when they were fighting, they were communicating, and, like, oh, it was just, it's so fantastic.
Do you think they'd be friends?
Yes. No question.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the only point you wanted to make. It sounds like you're not quite on board with this, Justin.
No, I'm on board. I think it's cool. I actually really like the way that the action was sort of
Why wouldn't they described. Be friends? They're both fucking vigilantes trying to fucking fight for justice. Like, are you fucking kidding me? They've both been trained in the ways and the arts of the ninja. What the fuck wouldn't they?
Now, do you think that, was Snake Eyes a gambler? Is that why he chose the name Snake Eyes, or it's more like
I've seen the movie. He's played by Nicolas Cage in the movie. Oh, it's a very good,
this
very
isn't
wild.
Face Off, you asshole.
Yeah. No, Snake Eyes.
The movie was called Leaving Snake Eyes. Right? Sad, tragic.
It's great. The way this played off, the way this builds over the course of the issue, I don't want to spoil all the things or the way that it plays out, but it's ludicrously over-the-top action movie the entire time. Super fun.
I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe, so I don't understand the deep emotional arcs on this Saturday morning cartoon based around selling toys, but I'm sure they're there.
They're fucking there, guy. All right.
And the other thing, the last thing that I'll mention about this comic book, not to belabor talking about it, it's crazy to me that there are three more issues to go. Like, if they have done this in the first three issues where they end up there, what is going to happen?
I don't know.
Let's
take
do
me
it.
There.
I'm excited into it. Next up, Stillwater number 7 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. This is dealing with the ramifications of the last issue, where a bunch of mercenaries came into this town where nobody dies. The church exploded. Some of our characters have been blown apart, and other people are literally trying to pick up the pieces. It gets very bloody, this issue. Like we talked about with previous ones, I love how they're whipping through the mythology here.
Yeah, I agree. The pace of this book has increased greatly in the last few issues, and I like where this is going. The reveal at the end is really fun, and it makes a lot more sense what got us started, one of the characters that got this whole thing started, why they are important, and the tension is high. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and they also bring up an interesting point here, which is worth talking about. If you're going to have knives as decorative on your wall, you better fucking sharpen them. You never know when they're going to come in handy like that. So
I sharpen everything on my wall just in case.
Smart.
Paintings.
Smart. Yeah.
That's it.
Just paintings. Yeah. That's all the stuff you have on your wall.
Just sharpening edges of a painting. It's good. Yep.
Yep. I sharpen my lamps. My house is childproof, obviously, but everything above a child's hand is deadly sharp.
This book's very good, and Ramon Curie Perez's art is very good as well. Next up, this is one that I know you liked quite a bit, Justin. Jonah and the Unpossible Monsters, number 3 from Oni Press by Chris Samdy and Laura Samdy. Why don't you talk about that one?
This is fun. I mean, this is a book that, like, the first issue felt like sort of this light, fun. It reminded me of a video game that I can't remember from, like, old Sega, I want to say.
Yeah. What are you talking about, like, Kid Icarus or something?
No. As it's gone on, this is really starting to develop some
nice
depth.
It was like dinosaur egg. It was like some, like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, it's a dinosaur-based game.
Yep.
But I think it's really developing a nice mythology here, and we get into we start to expand the universe in this issue.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, the real focus here is on the art and not so much the talking, which is great. I love the characters. We really in this issue kind of got a little bit more of like what's going on, what kind of world they're in, which is great. But I also just love them kind of like. Skipping through this amazing landscape and kind of dealing with things as they meet them. Mm-hmm. So, I'm a little nervous about, getting too much plot and not just kind of enjoying it. But it's fantastic.
Next up, The Scumbag, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Alex Reichel. In this issue, our main scumbag character is on the moon. He is fighting a moon cult who may or may not want to turn the world into a hippie peace love collective. Things go predictably wrong when our character is involved. This title is good. It's very fun. It's enjoyable. Things get wild and gross at certain points, but I like that Rick is able to put a great deal of emotion in the main character at the same time. And that comes through this issue, the way that Alex Rangel draws him in particular, where it's very subtle. The points when you can see his true humanity starting to leak through his scumbag nature.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Remender does such a great job of being like, this guy sucks. But it's a great little trick he pulls every time where eventually they do come out and be the hero that the world needs them to be. And the creative fun twist that he puts on it each time are excellent. And here's just another example of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to us getting past the scumbag nature of it all a little bit, but I think that
I got some news for you.
Yeah, bad news.
Just look at the title,
right? But I mean, I'm hoping that the character does evolve. But I'm excited to see, like, at the end of this issue, we kind of have a big thing happen. I'm excited to see what the ramifications of that are moving forward.
Last but not least, The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Rav V, art by Felipe Andrade. Love the first issue of this book about Death finding out that she is out of a job, so going to kill the baby who is eventually going to grant immortality to the human race. This issue, she wakes up a couple of years later in a human body and accidentally encounters that kid who is later going to create immortality. Beautiful art, beautiful story. Love this book.
This is the read of the week.
Yeah.
I think this was my favorite book of the week. It was so good, just achieving such great storytelling depth almost instantly. The art is excellent. Like, it's just, this feels like an issue of Sandman mid-run. Mm. It could be there. It's great.
That's a good way of putting it, actually. It does really feel like one of those one-off Sandman issues, but as an ongoing series. I like
that. Sort of like a World's End tavern from the, or I want to say early 50s of the Sandman run. This could easily be that.
I'll also, before Justin stole the fact that I said this was my favorite of the week.
I said it's the pick of the week. I did not take any sort of credit for it. It's our pick. Pete, obviously, our tastes are always in line. So how could you ever try to draw a wedge between us?
Okay, all your, bullshit aside, I do think that this is a beautiful, heartbreaking comic in all the right ways, like setting up such a cool, powerful story. And there's such amazing, small, little, powerful moments throughout this whole thing, like the whole thing of like what this kid is going through and then how the person like sees that and discovers it all. And then like, even the silly stuff of like the bird being like, I've never met a talking human before, was hysterical. There's so many just fantastic moments. And I just can't say enough about the art, especially the funeral stuff with all the flowers is so beautiful and sad. I really, really love this book. And even if you disagree with Justin a lot and don't like his ideas, you should still check out this book. Because, it's tough when, like, somebody you don't normally align with likes something you like, then you start to question it a little bit. But, put that aside and really check out this book.
Get out of here. Get out of here with that shit.
It's like you guys are the Batman and Snake Eyes of this podcast.
Oh, come on.
Yes, who's who? I guess I'm Snake Eyes, really, right?
No, I'm Snake Eyes.
Okay, I'm Batman.
What? I can't believe, Pete, you're like, no, I would never want to be Batman.
Well, no, I've got daddy issues, but I don't think they're that bad. You know what I mean?
You also definitely have butler issues.
Well, I feel like I talk less than Justin, so I should be Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
Nice. That is the defining characteristic of those two people. Batman, chatty. Snake Eyes, nervous in front of a crowd. What's the name of the game? Adventure Island?
Snake Eyes doesn't talk, you fucking piece of shit.
I mean, he talks. He just doesn't talk on camera.
Oh, okay.
Right. He got asked to do that TED Talk. Did you see that? I watched that on YouTube. It was awkward.
Now I got to look up this fucking game. Sorry.
Is what it did Adventure you say? Island? Is that what it is?
Hey, tell you what. While you look that up.
Yes, it is.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
There we go. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
See you on Adventure Island.